The old dining hall in the East Wing hadn't been used for a major gathering in more than 30 years, and it looked it. A small army of servants were scrubbing the floor, laying rush mats and lighting wall torches as the main courses of the meal were being served. The regent said nothing, and did his best not to notice the scurrying servants. He'd intended to use the dining hall in the North Wing, but at the last moment Prince Louis's men had occupied it, and he hadn't felt like fighting a war to get it back. So here he was, presiding over a banquet in one of the dingiest parts of the East Wing. God knows what they'd been using the place for previously, but from the smell that still lingered on the air, he should have ordered the hall fumigated first. Count William Howard leaned back in his chair and looked out over the crowd of nobles and courtiers and traders who sat packed shoulder to shoulder at the freshly scrubbed tables, filling the air with their chatter. There was more than enough wine for everyone, and the food was surprisingly good under the circumstances, but William only picked at his. He had too much on his mind to allow for an honest appetite. He didn't really want to be there at all, but his presence was necessary to prop up the weaker elements, who needed to see him being calm and strong. As long as he didn't look scared or worried, they could convince themselves they weren't either. The regent looked out over his supporters and fought to keep a weary frown off his face. They weren't the kind he'd have chosen for his friends, but he needed these people if he was to establish his own power base. Whoever eventually ended up on the throne of Redheart, they were going to need to help to govern the kingdom, and the regent intended there should be only one person able to give that help. Him. Let the princes have their troops and their magic. He would control trade, prices, and politics. And at the end of the day, he could control the king, too. In a way, although he regretted King Malcolm's death, in the long run, it was for the best. The royal line had grown weak and corrupt, distorted by their own power. Malcolm hadn't been a bad sort, all told. He'd just listened to too many stupid ballads about the honor and glory of the warrior's life. William had found a great deal of pleasure in Malcolm's company, when they weren't arguing politics, but their separate positions had meant they could never be the close friends they might otherwise have been. Still, William was determined to catch Malcolm's murderer and see him hang. He could do that much, at least, for his friend. Even if it turned out to be one of Malcolm's sons. William stirred uneasily in his chair. They had to be the most obvious suspects, if only because they had the most to gain. But as yet, no real evidence had turned up to incriminate any of them. Strange, that. You'd have thought something would have surfaced by now. Instead, they were busy gathering their forces and preparing for civil war, and he was trapped in this gloomy old hall, surrounded by chattering fools. Sometimes William wondered if Malcolm hadn't been right after all about the joys of battle.
My lords and ladies.
Down below at the end of one of the tables, some minor noble lurched to his feet.
I propose a toast. In these dark times, may we always have our Count Howard to light the way!
William lifted his glass to his mouth and wet his lips with the wine as everybody else finished their glasses. William was getting fed up with toasts. There had been too many of them, and they were beginning to sound increasingly hollow.
My lords and ladies, I too call upon you.
William grabbed a nearby empty platter.
To raise your glasses once again.
William couldn't help but smile, but to him the laughter seemed strained and forced. Gabrielle leaned close beside him.
My dear, that was a very nice throw, but I wouldn't do it again. A single outburst they'll explain away as high spirits, but more than one would be taken as a sign of tension.
I hate jesters.
That wasn't a jester.
Better safe than sorry.
Gabrielle smiled despite herself. William made a placating gesture with his hand.
I know, my dear. It was a stupid thing to do, but it drives me insane to just sit here doing nothing. How much longer before I can diplomatically leave?
No more than an hour or so, my love. Now eat your dinner. It's delicious.
I'm not hungry.
Eat it anyway. There are too many rumors of poison going around the court at the moment, and we can't afford to look timid in front of our guests.
William looked unenthusiastically at the platter of roast beef before him.
Where's the mustard? One can't eat beef without mustard.
Right in front of you, dear.
A messenger hurried in through a side door, spotted the regent at the high table, and hurried over to him. William smiled graciously at him, but his pulse quickened. He'd left instructions he wasn't to be disturbed unless it was vitally important. The messenger bowed briefly to him.
Captain Doyle to see you, my lord. He says it's urgent.
Doyle?
One of the steward's men, my lord.
Bring him in. I'll talk to him.
The messenger hurried away, and William settled back in his chair, frowning in spite of himself. He knew he wasn't supposed to look worried in front of his guests, but of late the steward seemed to have only bad news for him. It wasn't her fault, of course, but more and more he had to fight down an urge to shout and rant at her for letting things get so out of hand. William rubbed tiredly at his aching eyes. Had the unreal broken through again? And if so, what did Taggart expect him to do about it? He'd already given her a carte blanche to do whatever she thought necessary to protect the castle. The messenger returned with the guard captain, and William looked him over dubiously. Doyle had to be the scruffiest guard he'd ever seen. The man was a disgrace to his uniform. Doyle came to a halt beside the regent and gestured with his head for the messenger to leave. The messenger looked at William, who nodded.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Well?
Sorry to be the bearer of bad tidings, my lord, but Count Penhaligon and his family are dead.
Dead?
William looked at the guard blankly. Richard Penhaligon had always been one of his closest friends and his staunchest supporter.
You're sure?
I'm afraid so, my lord.
And his family? Even the children?
Yes, my lord. The unreal broke through in their chambers. It was very sudden. There was nothing anyone could have done. We used the sanctuary to put the room back to rights, but the Penhaligons were long dead by the time we got to them.
I see. Thank you for keeping me informed. Perhaps you could start arrangements for their burial.
I'm afraid not, my lord. There isn't enough left of them to bury. We did everything we could.
I'm sure you did.
William looked away from the guard. He suddenly felt very tired. His family were all dead and gone, and he'd lost most of his real friends in Malcolm's bloody campaigns. Richard Penhaligon had been the last, a brave knight and a cunning politician. He played the dulcimer badly and always knew the latest jokes. And now he was gone, like all the others. William looked back at the waiting guard.
Where's the steward now?
Up on the roof, my lord, dealing with the gargoyles.
Tell her I'd like to see her when she has a spare moment. It's not important, but I would like to see her.
Yes, my lord.
William watched as Captain Doyle scurried away. Not all that long ago, it would have been the custom for rulers to execute those who brought them bad news. William could understand why. There was a sick, hollow anger churning within him, and he wanted to lash out at someone, anyone, but he knew he couldn't. He had to appear calm and controlled at all times, even when he was falling apart inside. His followers expected it of him. Damn them. He leaned back in his chair and wished that he could leave. He was tired. He was always tired these days. He was so tense, he couldn't ever relax, and what little sleep he got didn't refresh him. Gabrielle did her best to help and support him, but there wasn't really anything she could do. He looked across at her and saw she was looking at him, concernedly. He managed a small smile for her.
Don't worry, my love. I'm all right. Just thinking.
About Richard Penhaligon. I am sorry, William.
No, I'll miss him. More than I can say. But no, I wasn't just thinking about him. More and more I keep wondering if I'm doing the right thing. The rite of transference is a hell of a gamble. And it could all so easily go wrong. We could end up with a real villain for a king. And the alternative may not be as bad as we thought. My little talk with Victor went a lot better than I had anticipated. Exiles changed him a lot, and all for the better. Maybe I was wrong to meddle in the succession after all.
Now stop that. You and I spent months weighing up the pros and cons of what we might have to do when Father died. This is the only way to save Red Heart, and you know it. They're my family, William, and I know them far better than you ever could. None of my brothers is fit to be king, least of all Victor. Oh, he's mellowed a lot, I'll grant you that. But if anything, he's weaker and more indecisive now than he ever was. They're my father's sons, all three of them. Worthless to the bone.
Now, Gabrielle, that's not true. Your father and I had our disagreements, but there was still much in the man that I admired.
He was a fool. He wasted his life on endless battles for a few extra miles of land. All he ever really cared for was bloodshed and slaughter. Never had any time for his family. My mother worshipped him, and she was lucky if she saw him one day in 10. And his children hardly saw him at all. If he'd spent more time with his sons, they might not have turned out the way they did.
He can't have been all bad. He managed to produce you, didn't he?
Don't change the subject. Redheart needs a strong king, a king it can rely on, and the simple truth is that none of Malcolm's sons are fit to rule. Were any of them to become king, Redheart would face utter devastation. You can change that. History will remember you as the man who put an end to the nightmare. I know it's been hard for you, my love, but it's nearly over now. Just hang on a little longer. I know how close you and Richard were, how much he meant to you, but you're not alone. You still have me.
Yes, I still have you.
Grey Davy glared down the wide corridor that led to the West Wing. Oil lamps and flaring torches burned at regular intervals along the walls, but halfway down the corridor, the light faded away into an impenetrable darkness. The tense air was hot and moist, like a midsummer night before a thunderstorm. It smelled vaguely of urine and burning cloth. There was something unsettling about the darkness that filled the corridor. The longer Davy looked at it, the more he began to feel dizzy and lightheaded. It felt almost like vertigo, as though he was looking down from the top of a tall tower. He deliberately looked away for a moment, and the feeling began to fade. Davy glanced at the guard captain beside him, who nodded understandingly. Captain Timothy Blood was an average height man in his early 40s, with short dark hair and unremarkable features. Put him in a crowd, and you could walk right past him without noticing, which was why he'd spent most of his early career as a spy. He'd been very good at it. He worked mostly in Hillsdown and the Forest Kingdom, and they never even knew he'd been there until they discovered something secret had gone missing. And by then, he was always long gone. But eventually, the life began to pall on him as his need for thrills and excitement gave way to a deeper need to be able to trust someone, anyone. His years in service had earned him a captain's rank in the Guards, and he took it with never a single regretful thought. It wasn't a bad life in the Guards, all told. Or at least it hadn't been, until King Malcolm's death. Now he was kept busy from dawn to dusk trying to keep the prince's troops from each other's throats, and the unreal seemed to be breaking through everywhere at once. Blood stirred uneasily. None of the hard lessons he'd learned playing the ancient game of danger and deceit were any use when it came to facing the unreal. He tapped the flat of his sword against his leg and wished he'd brought along something heavier as well, like a mace or a morning star. He smiled slightly. Why not wish for a suit of armor while he was at it? The unreal might be somewhat disturbing, but it was just a part of his job, and he'd deal with it in the same way he dealt with all the other problems his job produced, by hard work, perseverance, and if need be, cheating. He flexed his shoulders, trying to keep the muscles relaxed and easy. Having Grey Davy nearby helped. The Sanctuary's presence was both calming and invigorating. Problems seemed simpler and easier to deal with, and fears and insecurities faded away into the background. Unfortunately, Sanctuaries were immune to their own power. Grey Davy glared down the corridor, his glare deepening into an angry scowl.
Oh, this shouldn't be happening. I mean, this is the West Wing, dammit. Nothing ever goes wrong in the West Wing.
Great. That means the darkness ahead is nothing more than a mass hallucination, and we can all get back to our beds. Only it isn't a hallucination, is it? Tell me what to do, Davy. You're the expert.
When it comes to the unreal, there aren't any experts. Just people who've stayed alive longer than others. Fill me in on what's been happening here, Tim. Maybe we can still nip this in the bud before it has a chance to establish itself.
Blood glanced briefly at the darkness down the corridor to make sure it wasn't getting any closer.
Things started to feel wrong about an hour ago. One of our regular patrols in the area hadn't reported back yet. I sent in another patrol to see what was keeping them. They didn't report back either. And then I started to hear some disturbing rumors. On a normal day, people pass in and out of this wing all the time, just going about their daily business. Only now, people were going in, but they didn't seem to be coming back out again. And people who went looking for them just vanished, without a trace. So I sent for a sanctuary. Just before you got here, this darkness appeared in all the corridors that led into the West Wing. Whatever is in there knows you're here.
That's what I like about you, Tim. You're always such an optimist.
Would you rather I lied to you about our chances?
It couldn't hurt.
They stood together a while, looking down the corridor. The darkness seemed to shift and stir as though it was watching them. Behind them, Blood's company radiated uncertainty and doubt. If he didn't know better, he could swear that the darkness was feeding on the men's emotions. Blood glanced back at them and knew he'd better get them moving soon. Once they were doing something, they'd be too busy to be scared. He wished for a moment that he'd brought more than just one squad. A dozen guards weren't much to set against the Unreal. On the other hand, when it came to the Unreal, he could have 100 guards at his back and he still wouldn't feel secure. He looked at Grey Davy and decided he'd better start the ball rolling. Left to himself, Davy tended to forget the urgency of the situation and just stand around thinking. But Blood couldn't give the order to go in himself. That had to come from Davy. The sanctuary outranked him.
Any advice for my men before we go in?
Yeah. Try not to get killed.
Davy scowled suddenly and glanced sideways at Blood.
Sorry, Tim. This business has got me all upset. The West Wing has always been the most stable part of the castle, the one area you could depend on. If that's been breached by the Unreal, then nowhere's safe anymore. Get your men ready, Tim. We're going in.
Timothy Blood nodded to his men. Blood moved unhurriedly among them, checking their weapons and equipment. He forced himself not to be overanxious. The Unreal was always dangerous, but these were good men, professionals. He could trust them to do their job. He racked his brain for anything he might have forgotten, but quickly realized he was just putting off the moment when he'd have to lead the way into darkness. It was at times like this that he really missed being a spy.
All right, you three are on torch detail. Keep your swords ready, but your main duty will be to give us light.
You ready, Tim?
As ready as we're going to be. Let's go.
The two of them set off down the corridor toward the darkness, the company of guards close behind them. The darkness seemed to swirl hypnotically as they drew nearer. The temperature dropped sharply, and Blood clenched his teeth to stop them from chattering. He shivered once and hoped no one would mistake it for nerves. The Unreal Knight loomed up before them, and Blood and Davy hesitated only a moment before stepping into it. The air itself seemed to change. It seemed somehow stale and thick, as though they'd suddenly been transported miles underground. The light from the guards' torches produced a pool of light just big enough to move in. Beyond the pale golden glow, there was nothing but the night. Blood had no way of telling where he was, or what, if anything, might lie outside the pool of light. He hefted his sword nervously, and then lifted his hand suddenly to call a halt.
You sense it too?
Yes. There's something moving out there. What is that?
Whatever it is, it's not from the real. It could be anything. There's no limit to what the Unreal can create.
Can't you do something about this?
Maybe. I don't know. If I use my power to dispel this darkness, it might not leave me much to face whatever's out there. The Unreal is very strong here, Tim. I can feel it pressing against the light.
Get rid of the darkness, Davy. We're too vulnerable like this.
All right. But I've got a bad feeling about this.
You're always having bad feelings.
And they're usually right.
Grey Davy pulled his power about him like a cloak, and the darkness faded away, unable to withstand the sanctuary's presence. Blood stared about him. The corridor seemed to stretch away forever in both directions, without beginning or end. The walls had sagged inward, bulging out into the corridor, as though the solid stone and plaster had somehow melted and run and then reformed. floor was covered with thousands of crawling insects. The scurrying creatures swarmed over the guard's boots. Black tar dripped from the low ceiling, hot and smoking.
How much of this is real?
I'm not sure. When the unreal is strong, some of its changes can't be undone. The changed state becomes real. Stay close by me. Nothing can harm you as long as I'm here, but something's wrong here, Tim. Something's horribly wrong.
He looked around him, his hands clenching into fists. Blood felt it too, a deep, unsettling feeling of being watched.
Something's coming our way. Something awful.
Blood nodded tightly. His men had picked up on the tense atmosphere and were hefting their weapons and glaring about them. Blood knew he'd better find them a target soon or they'd start coming apart.
So what do we do, Davy? Stand our ground, turn and run, try to press on? What do we do?
I don't know. I've never seen anything like this. I think we'd better go back, Tim. I'm not up to this. We need the steward and her high magic.
All right. Everyone, start backing away. Down the corridor. Keep your eyes open and your swords ready. Take your time. There's no need to hurry.
He kept his voice carefully calm and even, but already some of his men were starting to panic. Blood didn't blame them. So far, his example had kept them from breaking into a run, but he didn't know how long that would last. Gray Davy wasn't helping. His face was ashen white, and his eyes were fixed on something in the distance only he could see. Blood glared at the corridor that stretched away behind them. He couldn't tell if they were any closer to the West Wing's boundary or not. He didn't even know if what he was seeing was real or only an illusion. He would have sworn they hadn't walked very far into the West Wing. And then the roaring began. The air pressure began to build, and the rising wind tugged at the guards' clothing. They turned and ran, charging down the corridor.
Hold your ground, men! Damn! It's just us, Davy! Davy?
It's coming. I didn't think it...
What? What's coming?
A change wind.
Blood glanced down the corridor and saw it, huge and unstoppable. A change wind was sweeping down the corridor, transmuting the world from gold into dross, from reality into nightmare. The walls erupted as the wind passed over them. Gaping mouths opened in what had been stone and plaster, their screams buried under an ocean of worms. The floor began to melt and run away, revealing jagged-edged holes full of blood-red flowers. The ceiling caught fire, and the change wind roared on, leaving damnation in its wake.
We have to leave! Now!
Blood grabbed Davy by an arm and ran. He looked for the end of the corridor ahead and couldn't see it. It didn't make much difference anyway. The change wind would catch him in a matter of moments, and whatever was left of him after that wouldn't care about anything anymore. He looked around for the sanctuary and then skidded to a halt as he saw that Gray Davy had stopped and turned to face the change wind. The guards kept on running.
Move it! We've got to get out of here!
Hugo! I'm needed here! My power will buy you and your men the time you need to escape! You've got to tell Taggart about this! Warn the castle! Tell him nowhere's safe anymore!
He stood his ground and pulled his power about him. Blood looked over his shoulder at his disappearing guards and then looked back at the sanctuary.
Oh, hell! Someone's got to watch your back, Davy!
He stepped forward to stand beside Gray Davy, sword in hand, and the two of them stood together as the change wind came howling toward them. Prince Louis strode angrily back and forth in his private quarters, gulping at a glass of wine without really tasting it. Apart from a few bruises and a nasty gash on one hand, he'd come out of Dominic's ambush pretty much unscathed, but he was still fuming mad. A third of his men were dead or wounded. Almost another third had deserted his ranks and left the castle. He had the satisfaction of knowing that the monk and Ironheart had done some considerable damage to Dominic's troops, but the attack itself still rankled. He'd gone to negotiate in good faith, and they'd laughed at him. Louis gritted his teeth and tried to calm himself. All right, he'd made a mistake. He wouldn't make the same mistake again. He threw himself into his favorite chair and stared sulkily at his feet. Nothing seemed to be going right lately. The monk had failed to destroy Victor and his people at Barrowmere. The alliance with Dominic was over before it had even begun, and now his oak tree was dying. He glared at the great tree in its corner. The leaves had fallen from its branches, and the bark was mottled with some kind of fungus. Lewis had almost exhausted his earth magic trying to keep the tree alive, but something in the tree resisted him. Either the Unreal had got past his wards and undermined his magic, or Dominic had somehow managed to poison it. Lewis frowned sulkily. He was fond of that tree, and if all that wasn't bad enough, now Ironheart was getting mulish. He scowled at a tall suit of armor standing motionless in its corner. The battered armor was clean and gleaming, with only a few flecks of dried blood around the gauntlet's knuckles to show that Ironheart had recently been in battle.
You promised me my freedom. You gave me your word, Prince Lewis.
So I did. When I become king, you shall be free of all obligations to me.
That wasn't the deal.
The deal has changed. My dear Ironheart, you must see that I need your protection now more than ever. I really can't do without you until I am safely on the throne, and the stone is mine to draw on.
You may never be king. I see and hear many things denied to your limited senses. Castle Midnight is under siege. The Unreal is finally breaking free of the chains that have bound it for so long, and creatures of the night wait impatiently in the dark places for the last few barriers to fall. It may already be too late to stop them.
Do you know that for sure?
No, but I suspect it.
Your suspicions don't matter. Nothing matters to you and me but the bond between us. You're mine, Ironheart, body and soul, and your only hope for freedom is to obey me in all things.
Yes, Prince Lewis, I'm yours for now.
You're mine until I decide otherwise.
Lewis emptied his glass, dropping it carelessly onto the grassy floor. He was tired, and his injured hand ached. He wanted to go to bed and forget the day's troubles in sleep, but he had to wait for the monk's report, and as usual, the monk was late. Lewis scowled. He had to know what was happening in Victor's camp.
Come in.
The door swung open, and a young serving maid came in, bearing a cold meal on a tray. Lewis remembered ordering the meal earlier, but he wasn't hungry anymore. He started to wave the maid and meal away, and then stopped and took a second look at the maid. As a different hunger awoke in him.
Come here, girl. Let me look at you.
All right.
She moved reluctantly forward, holding the tray out before her as though it could protect her from him.
Put the tray down.
Where?
Anywhere, that table, right there.
Her hands were trembling visibly, and she turned slowly back to face him. She was good-looking in a simple, healthy way, with wavy, shoulder-length hair and a firm, supple figure. She looked to be in her mid-twenties, but her pale face and wide eyes made her seem much younger. Lewis smiled at her easily, but she didn't return the smile.
They've been telling stories about me again, haven't they?
Yes, my lord.
Oh, you don't want to believe everything you hear, my dear. My enemies tell lies about me and try to make me out a monster. And I tell the same kind of lies about them. It's all part of the game we play. It's called politics. Now stop shivering and shaking and relax. Do I look like a monster to you?
No.
That's right. I don't.
Lewis nodded surreptitiously to Ironheart. His mailed hands shot out and grasped the maid's arms above the elbows.
Oh, don't bother trying to break free. Ironheart doesn't let go unless I tell him to.
Lewis rose slowly out of his chair and walked over to stand before her. He reached out a hand to caress her face, and she shrank away from him. Lewis smiled slightly.
The one thing you should know by now about Castle Midnight is that nothing is necessarily what it seems.
By the time the monk materialized, Lewis had finished amusing himself with the serving maid.
You're an hour late, monk.
The monk's empty cowl turned slightly to observe the still, bloody form lying limply on the floor. Her wide, staring eyes saw nothing at all, and her face wasn't pretty anymore.
It seems you've made use of your time.
Oh, that? Get rid of it.
The body will not be found, sire.
Very well. Now, why are you so late?
My apologies. There is much of interest happening in the castle at present, and I like to keep you well informed. For example, I was right in my suspicions about your brother Victor. He's using a double for his public appearances. The man you saw in court this evening was merely an actor under a glamour spell.
I would have sworn it was Victor. It looked like him. It was his voice. Damn it, he had fire magic. I saw it.
A conjuring trick, Your Highness. Sleight of hand, nothing more.
Dominic already knew about this. That's what he was hinting at earlier on.
Exactly. It appears he's known about this for some time. He's already set in motion a plan to discredit the imposter. There is to be a testing before the stone tomorrow morning. Dominic will challenge the double to spill his blood on the stone, and when he can't, thus proving himself an imposter, Dominic will demand to know what has happened to the real Victor. His people will then be forced to reveal how ill and helpless your brother really is.
Not a bad idea, and one we can take advantage of. My friends, we are going to attend this testing. Once the imposter has been revealed, I'll raise a clamor about who else is pretending to be what they're not. In the confusion, my men will attack Dominic's, and you, Monk, will kill my brother. I'd prefer to do it myself, but you're the only one of us strong enough to stand up against his sorcery. Afterward, we'll claim he was an unreal double that had managed to replace the real Dominic, and there'll be no one left who can prove otherwise. Yes, I like that. Make the arrangements, Monk.
Ironheart and the Monk watched Lewis leave, then turned to each other.
I want to kill him. I want it more than I've ever wanted anything before.
In good time. For the moment, at least, we need him. As long as the castle believes we serve Lewis, we're protected from too close a scrutiny. The steward suspects our nature, but Lewis's position keeps her from doing anything about it. Put aside your anger, my friend. Lewis is useful to us.
He won't always be.
That's right. And then you and I will teach him the true meaning of fear and suffering.
It won't be enough. No matter how much he suffers, it won't be enough. I need him to burn and writhe as I have all these long years.
He reached up with his mailed gauntlets and lifted off his helmet. The room's soft lamplight shone palely on the dead white face. The flesh was slack and utterly colorless, even where the left eye had recently been cut in two by a sword thrust. No blood had flowed from the jagged edges of the wound, nor ever would.
I've been dead almost 12 years now. 12 years since I took my life and damned myself by magic to this unliving hell. I did this to myself, Monk, and all for revenge on a man whose face I can't even remember now. I always was a fool where a woman was concerned. Now my organs rot and decay within me, and my bones grow brittle, and still the preservation spell won't let me die the true death. I can feel the rot and corruption within me, and the pain burns endlessly every hour of the day and night. I can't rest. I can't sleep, and I'm always so damn tired. Sometimes I think the tiredness is worse than the pain. Can't you help me at all, Monk? You have power. Can't you at least let me sleep just for a while?
I'd help you if I could, my friend. But the curse on you is beyond my undoing.
I can't stand this much longer. I can't. I'll go mad. I move and talk and fight and pretend I'm still alive, but Every day it gets harder to hold on to my memories of who I was. I'm losing them, bit by bit, to the endless pain and rage and frustration. Lewis swore he had a counterspell that would free me from this curse and let me die at last. But sometimes I think I'm too useful to him, and he'll never let me go. I'm losing hope, Monk, and hope is all I've got left.
You must be strong, my friend. It won't be long now, I promise you. Just hang on a little longer, and all your suffering will be at an end. I give you my word on it.
Ironheart looked at the monk, and his dead mouth tried to smile.
You are the only friend I have, Monk, and I'm not even sure you're real. It doesn't matter anyway. I don't care. You've been a good friend to me. At least when I'm with you, I can almost forget the pain for a while.
I can't stay with you long, Ironheart. But I'll stay as long as I can.
I get so scared sometimes. Scared that when I finally get my chance to die, I won't have the guts to take it. This is worse than any hell I ever dreamed of. But even so, sometimes the thought of dying scares me even more. I wasn't a bad man in my day. But since I died, I've done questionable things just to cling to this horrid existence. I'm afraid all the time now, Monk. Scared to die, but just as scared of going on like this.
It won't be much longer. Everything is in motion.
I hope it is. With every fiber of my being, I hope this ends soon.
Hey! There's one over there! What are you doing? Get your nets out! Your nets!
Oh, come on, these damn gargoyles aren't gonna get caught!
Were you told to give up? Brandon's been at this as long as you, and he hasn't complained.
That's because one of the gargoyles tripped him. He's lying by one of the chimneys with a concussion.
I know it's not easy, but we got... Sawyer, watch out!
Cord couldn't do much more than watch as the ugly gray gargoyles ran nimbly back and forth across the uneven slates, dodging the chasing guards with contemptuous ease. The guards ran doggedly on in pursuit, brandishing their nets. The full moon shed its light across the hills and valleys of the massive roof as though it was having trouble believing what it was seeing. Catriona Taggart pulled herself up through the open trapdoor and out onto the roof. She shivered just once at the cold wind, glared disgustedly around her, and then shook her head. She clambered unsteadily across the uneven roof, heading for Daemon Cord. At any other time, she might have stopped to admire the view. Castle Midnight's roof was an architect's nightmare of tiles, slates, and chimneys, rising here and there into peaks and gables for no apparent reason, and peppered with pipes and protrusions and anything else the castle's designers had felt might be a good idea at the time. Under a full moon, it all looked very picturesque. It was also a hell of a roof to have to chase anything over, particularly gargoyles. The nasty creatures were short and stocky, with lots of teeth and claws, and a set of stubby bat wings that luckily weren't strong enough to let the gargoyles do more than glide a few feet at a time. They were definitely dangerous and vicious by temperament, but as yet hadn't managed to inflict any real injuries on the chasing guards. Probably because the damn things were laughing too hard. They'd never had such a good time.
Hey! There's a gargoyle coming in behind you!
Oh, that is it! I've had it with these things! I don't care if the king himself rises from his grave and orders us to put these things back. I am done! Steward, you know more about this unreal stuff than I do. Can't we just shoot the damn things and be done with it?
We could, but the regent himself wants them all in one piece. We believe that if the unreal outbreaks pass, the gargoyles will just go back to being statues again.
Stuff that! We should be downstairs guarding people or establishing defensive areas, not up here chasing down haunted decorations.
As I believe Cord said, we're here to follow orders. My orders come directly from the regent himself, and then down to court, and finally to you. If you don't do the job, then I get in trouble, and I'd rather that didn't happen.
And I'd rather not break a leg because of these overgrown geckos. We're in danger of getting hurt here, steward.
And you're certainly in danger of getting hurt if you don't get back to work. Tell me, do you like your arms where they are? Because there's lots of other places I could move them.
I'll just get right back to work, then.
Glad to hear it.
Taggart walked over to Cord, who raised an eyebrow.
You wouldn't actually transmogrify one of your own men, would you?
Goodness no, I'd rather save my energy.
He's right, you know. They are stupid orders.
They certainly are. The region's well known for being very careful with a ducat.
I wish you were more careful with our own men.
I agree. But I doubt it's just the one man who's annoyed. You'd better catch one soon, or we're going to have a mutiny on our hands.
Taggart watched, wincing, as a guard slowly closed the gap between himself and a fleeing gargoyle. The creature was flailing, but controlled, carefully keeping his speed down to the point where the guard still thought he had a chance of catching the thing. Of course, the moment the guard got too close, the gargoyle just put on a burst of speed and vanished into the shadows. The guard skidded to a halt, looked frantically around him, and then threw down his butterfly net and jumped up and down on it. Two guards tried to jump a running gargoyle from different sides. The creature stopped dead in its tracks at just the right moment, and the two guards slammed into each other. The gargoyle who caused the collision flew around, wild with glee. Damon Cord leaned out from his chimney stack, mallet in hand.
Cord! What? I just beamed it. It's not dead. Come on now, tie him up. What? We got one.
That's exactly my point. You've been up here for over 2 hours, and all you've got to show for it is one gargoyle. The other 49 are still charging around the roof and peeing in the gutters. And I hate to think what they've been doing down the chimneys, but the smell in the kitchens is appalling. How many men have you got up here, Damon?
Well, I've got 32.
32 men, and it's taken you 2 hours to catch one gargoyle. I should have come up here with you. Whose bright idea was the butterfly nets?
Mine. We tried roping them at first, but that didn't work out too well.
I just know I'm going to regret asking this, but why?
Well, every time a guard lassoed one, the gargoyle just kept on running and dragged the guard after him. They're a lot heavier than they look, those gargoyles. We lost 8 men to injuries that way.
Damon.
Well, then we tried tripwires, but the gargoyles have better night vision than we do. And in the excitement of the chase, we kept forgetting where the wires were. We lost 10 men to injuries that way.
All right. Call the men in. I've got an idea.
Hey, all of you, get over here!
The guards came back to regroup. All of them were breathing hard, and some of them were limping. The gargoyles gathered together in little groups and waited eagerly to see what new game the guards were going to come up with.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to set up traps. Pick some chimneys set close together, then set your nets across them.
Like a spider web.
Yes,
like a spider web. Remind me to give you a medal. You're the first one here to show some brains. We're going to secure them lightly, barely enough to keep them held up.
And then what?
Henry, well, Cord will show you. Get to work, everybody. Cord, you're going to chase a gargoyle into these traps. As soon as it hits the net, it'll detach and the damned thing will be too twisted up to get away. Sound good?
Can I use my mallet?
You can use a chamber pot if you think it'll help.
I'll stick with my mallet.
Cord looked happily about him. The men had set up their traps, and the gargoyles looked interested. He set off at a run toward the nearest pack, who scattered hastily before him. Cord might be heavy on his feet, but he could build up quite a bit of speed when he put his mind to it, if only through sheer momentum. The gargoyles took off in different directions, but Cord chose one and kept stubbornly after it. For a while, everyone else just stopped where they were and watched as Cord grimly pursued the gargoyle across the uneven roof with his mallet poised and ready to strike. The gargoyle kept just a few feet ahead of him, ducking, dodging, and plunging back and forth, and generally having too good a time tormenting Cord to realize it was being gradually herded toward the hidden nets. Finally, it ran full pelt between two chimneys.
And that's how you do it, men! Now that you've seen Cord do it, do it yourself 48 more times. Now get to it!
Two of the guards dragged the trapped gargoyle away, and the others set about making more traps with the remaining nets. Cord leaned against a chimney stack and had a quiet wheeze. Taggart nodded, satisfied. Maybe now she could get back to some real work. She frowned suddenly and turned to Cord.
I thought Mother Donna was supposed to be up here with you. What happened to her?
She was called away.
Some sort of emergency in the West Wing.
The West Wing? Last I heard, the place was perfectly quiet, as always. Captain Doyle, what's wrong?
You'd better come back down, Kate. All hell's broken loose in the West Wing.
What is it? A manifestation? A poltergeist? What?
Doyle swallowed hard. All his usual swagger and bravado were gone, and his face was deathly pale.
You're going to have to see it for yourself, Kate. It's bad. Very bad.
All right. Think your men can handle this without us?
If they can't, there'll be no help in the West Wing.
Right. Let's go!
Taggart and Cord hurried after Doyle as he led them down the gloomy corridor that led to the West Wing boundary. The air was close and muggy, weighed down by a stench of burning flesh. Water ran slowly down the corridor walls as though they were sweating from the heat. The floor shook and trembled beneath their feet as though something heavy was tramping back and forth in the distance. As they approached the boundary, Taggart felt a pressure building. Soon it was like the air itself was trying to keep them away. Doyle began to slow to a walk, and Taggart and Cord slowed with him.
How long has this been going on?
About 3 hours, we think. It caught us all by surprise. I mean, nothing ever happens in a West Wing. Then two of our patrols went into the wing and didn't come out again. Captain Blood took a sanctuary and some men and went in after them. They should have been safe enough. Great Davy is one of the strongest sanctuaries we've ever had.
What happened?
The Unreal is loose in a West Wing. It found them and rolled right over them. They never stood a chance. Only 5 of them came back. All of them horribly injured. The sanctuary's dying.
The three of them slowed their pace as they came to a makeshift barricade that blocked off the corridor. Tables and chairs had been dragged out of adjoining rooms, stacked roughly together and tied in place. A dozen or so guards manned the barricade. They moved grimly to Captain Doyle as he approached, and a few of them even managed some kind of salute for the steward. She gave them her best calm and reassuring smile, but inwardly she was shocked by the guards' faces. They were white and drawn and very frightened. The guards all had drawn swords, but their hands were trembling. The men looked to be on the edge of exhaustion, as though they'd been through a major battle.
Report. Has the situation changed while I've been gone?
The guards looked at one another, and finally one of them stepped forward.
It's getting closer, sir. We can feel it. About half an hour ago, something came flying towards us out of the darkness. It was bone white and ugly, and it screamed like a hungry child. We cut it to pieces, and it still didn't die. In the end, we had to burn it before it had stopped moving. We're still holding the line, sir. But I don't know how much longer we can hold it without reinforcements.
Right. Good job. How's Captain Blood?
Asking for you, sir. I think you better see him.
Doyle gripped the man's shoulder for a moment, in silent recognition of what he'd been through. And then he led Taggart and Cord into a nearby room. 5 men lay on the floor on makeshift stretchers. 2 of them had blankets pulled up over their faces. Another was asleep, his body wrapped with so many salves and bloodstained bandages that he probably wouldn't have awakened if a church bell rang next to him. Captain Timothy Blood was sitting on his stretcher with his back to the wall and his sword across his lap. His right arm ended too soon in a wad of bloodstained wrappings. His face was wet with sweat and his eyes were haunted. Grey Davy lay beside him, hunched and twisted under a thick blanket. Blood nodded to Doyle and then to the steward. He started to get up, but Taggart quickly waved him back.
Tell me what happened.
For a while, it didn't look too bad. Scary, but nothing Davy couldn't handle. Then the Unreal came roaring out of nowhere and swept over us like a wave. Davy tried to buy us some time to get out, but he couldn't hold it back. Most of my men died in the first few seconds. The rest of us got out by staying close to Davy. He took the worst of it on himself, deliberately.
What happened to him?
See for yourself.
Cord stepped forward and knelt beside the sanctuary. He pulled the blanket as gently as he could, and then had to look away. Taggart wanted to, but wouldn't let herself be weak. This was her job. Grey Davy's body was twisted and misshapen. His ribs had swollen and burst out through the flesh. His legs had fused into a single boneless tail. His hands had scales and claws. His eyes were gone.
He didn't live long, fortunately. We left a lot of good men behind us back there in the West Wing, you know. Good men. They never stood a chance. We got back here, the 4 of us dragging Davy between us, started the barricade and found Doyle and his men. And that's it. That's the story. And God have mercy on all of our souls.
Cord covered Grey Davy with the blanket again. Taggart blinked away the beginning of tears. She couldn't be weak now. The others needed her to be strong.
You did well. Now take a rest. I'll have you and the others escorted out of here as soon as possible. And don't worry. We'll put the West Wing right again, I promise you.
She turned and left, and Cord and Doyle followed her out. In the corridor, Taggart wiped sweat from her face with a shaking hand and looked at Doyle.
Anything else I need to know, Matt?
I've sent for another sanctuary. Mother Donna's on her way. She's supposed to be the best, but Davy wasn't exactly a beginner, and he couldn't even slow it down.
We're going to have to stop it here. Well, it's still limited to one area.
Sure, but how are we going to stop it? You can't fight this kind of unreal with swords and axes, can you?
I don't know. I think we're going to have to go in there and see for ourselves.
I had a horrible suspicion you were going to say that. And I would like to point out, before we go any further, that I am not volunteering to go back in there with you.
This breakthrough must have a heart, some gateway, to act as its entry point into reality. If we can find that and destroy it, maybe we can still stem the tide. Assuming we survive long enough to reach it, of course.
Of course. I'm still not volunteering.
Good man. I knew I could depend on you. As soon as Mother Donna gets here, we can make a start.
Then what are we waiting for? Let's do it.
Everyone looked around, startled. It never ceased to amaze Taggart how silently the Reverend Mother could move when she chose to. Taggart started to say something polite and welcome, but stopped as she took in the sanctuary's face. There were harsh, tired lines around her eyes that hadn't been there a few days ago. Taggart put a gentle hand on Mother Donna's arm.
I'm sorry about Davy. From what I hear, he died bravely doing his duty.
He always did have more guts than sense. He thought being a sanctuary was enough to protect him from anything. Stubborn as a mule and half as bright. But he always had time to listen to a hard luck story, and he was the softest touch for a loan I ever knew. I'm going to miss him. God grant that he rest easy. Well then, Kate, looks like it's left to us to push back the darkness. Are you ready?
Taggart nodded, smiling. Like all sanctuaries, Mother Donna carried with her an aura of peace and calm. But Donna also had more genuine love and caring in her than any other three people. She was a medium-height, broad-based woman who gave an immediate impression of strength and determination. There was something of the bulldog about her, though only the cruel ever applied that insight to her face. She was plain, as she'd be the first to admit, but her wise eyes and ready smile kept her from being ugly. She was in her early 50s and looked it. She spent her early years as a priest before coming to Castle Midnight to train as a sanctuary. She'd never said why she made the change. She wore plain, sack-like robes and hacked her gray hair carelessly off at shoulder length. All in all, she looked more like a retired mercenary than an ex-priest. Mother Donna was perhaps the most powerful sanctuary Castle Midnight had ever known. She was loved and admired by practically everyone, even though most of them thought she was crazy, if only because she'd given over her entire life to fighting evil and had a tendency to walk right through anyone who got in her way.
I'm ready.
Taggart could feel her fears and worries easing away in the sanctuary's presence. It was clear the guards were feeling it, too.
Damon, you'll have to guard us from any physical manifestations. I've got a feeling I'm going to need as much power as I can raise to deal with the unreal heart. As and when we find it. Mother Donna should be able to hold the worst off until we get there. Doyle, I know this will break your heart, but you can't come with us. I need you here in charge of the barricade. If we don't come back, send word to court of what's happened and get the hell out of here. After that, I think the best bet would be for the Regent to order a complete evacuation of the castle and look for help outside Red Heart. Oh, where you might find it is beyond me. Maybe the High Warlock, if he's still alive.
Doyle bit his lip.
You can't go in there without an armed backup, Kate. Cord's good, we've all seen him work, but he's just one man. I think I'll tag along with a few good men, just in case.
Thanks, Matt, but no. As Damon said, this isn't the kind of unreal you can fight with swords and axes. You and your men wouldn't last 10 minutes once the going got rough. But it was a nice thought. Now do as you're told and don't argue.
Doyle nodded glumly. Taggart turned and looked at the ramshackle barricade. It wouldn't be much use against what she feared was coming, but its solid presence was still somehow comforting. Beyond it lay the unknown and all the horrors of the unreal. Taggart turned to Cord.
Don't just stand there, Damon. Give me a leg up.
Her apprentice grinned and leaned forward to make a stirrup with his hands. Taggart quickly pulled herself over the top of the barricade and clambered down the other side. Mother Donna followed, with Cord bringing up the rear. The three of them stood together a moment at the base of the barricade, staring into the west wing. It seemed darker on this side, as if light itself was afraid to encroach on this area. Taggart steeled herself and raised her hand. The sword of light formed in her hand, crackling and spitting, and the glowing shield appeared on her arm. The scintillating light of the balefire reflected brightly from the polished wood-paneled walls. Cord still had his mallet. He carried it loosely in one hand, as though the huge steel weapon was weightless. Mother Donna strode along between them, her hands empty, her face calm and determined. Cord looked at her thoughtfully from time to time when he thought she wasn't looking. They passed through a series of deserted corridors, and strange undercurrents hummed on the still air. They knew they were being watched, and that not too far ahead, something awful was waiting impatiently for them to come to it. Streaks of darkness cut across the floor, sometimes right in front of wall torches. Other shadows were too dark and subtly misshapen. Finally, Taggart rounded a corner and crossed the boundary into unreality. She stopped dead in her tracks. The other two stopped with her. The corridor was lit by a lurid crimson glow that came from everywhere and nowhere. A man was crawling along the wall. He was naked and covered with patchy black fur. Thorned vines hung down from his eye sockets, and maggots burrowed in his legs. Something long and flat with too many legs scuttled back and forth across the floor in frantic little dashes. The flagstones on the floor formed into distorted faces with mad eyes. And then they disappeared. And where the floor had been, there was only darkness that seemed to fall away forever. Fox heads on the walls drooled acid. Birds flew up by the vein-covered ceiling and turned into moths that dripped blood. Snow fell through the air and disappeared before it hit the floor, which had reappeared as crude wooden slats. Smoky flames flickered up between the slats. A man was weaving a web in a corner. His head was twisted so that he looked permanently backward.
Dear Lord, protect us now and in the hour of our need, and deliver us from the powers of darkness.
Cord took the opportunity of her distraction to silently indicate to Taggart that he wanted to talk to her. They fell back a few paces, out of earshot. Cord looked worriedly at Taggart.
How are we going to handle this? It's all I can do to stay here with her so close, and she's not even really using her power yet. And when she does, I'll be banished along with everything else that's unreal. And once I'm gone, I don't think I can come back again.
I'm sorry. I hadn't thought. Look, her range as a sanctuary is limited. As long as you stay at least 10 feet away, you should be safe enough.
She smiled at him fondly.
Why have you stayed with me so long, Damon? You know that as soon as there's a king on the throne, I'll have to use the stone to banish the unreal from the castle. You'll be gone. It'll be as though you never existed.
I won't really. I'm not real. I'm just an idea, a whim made flesh and blood by the strength of unreality. I came to you because you needed me so badly. But I'm also your friend, and that's why I've stayed. Just because I'm not real, it doesn't mean I don't have feelings.
They shared a smile. And if it was a sad smile, they both pretended not to notice.
You look after Mother Donna. I'll cover your back. From a distance.
Taggart nodded and walked forward to rejoin Mother Donna. The unreal had moved no closer during her absence, held back by the sanctuary's presence. Taggart even felt a little of her own unease fall away as she fell under Donna's calming influence again.
The focus for all this is a gateway not far from here. We have to shut it down while we still can. It's growing stronger all the time. Follow me and stay close. It's going to be a rough ride.
She walked unflinchingly forward into the madness, and Catriona Taggart walked at her side, silver balefire glowing in her hand and on her arm. Cord watched them go and waited a while before bringing up the rear. He relaxed his grip on his mallet and took instead out of thin air a huge mace. The shaft was 4 feet long, and a great steel head was studded with barbed spikes. And so a man who wasn't real went forward to battle the unreality that birthed him. The air heaved and sparkled around Mother Donna as she walked deeper into the west wing. Distorted, melting creatures fell back before her, their flesh crawling and bubbling like hot wax over a flame. But the floor beneath her feet was just a floor, and the air directly around her was fresh, clear, and pure, and nothing that was not real could tarry in her presence. A few of the more stable creatures tried to block her way. This was where Taggart and Cord made themselves known to the unreal. Taggart cut them down with her balefire sword. Some way behind the two of them, Cord cut a bloody path through a growing crowd of horrors to keep up with them. His mace rose and fell with inhuman regularity, and the creatures from the dark places couldn't stand against him. And still, Mother Donna strode on, more slowly now as the strain began to tell. Nightmares scuttled around her, changing and reforming even as she looked. The limits of her power grew steadily smaller as the pressure of unreality weighed down upon her. Taggart swung her sword until her arm ached and sweat ran down her heaving sides. But for every creature that fell, there were always more to take its place.
Steward, if you could carve a path. Having to do this so early doesn't bode well.
We'll do what we must, dear.
Right.
Taggart concentrated and called upon her high magic.
Restore! Good job. Quickly now.
The three rushed ahead through the now cleared corridor, but they all knew it wouldn't be for long. The magic took its toll in pain and energy, and all too soon the light was flickering unsteadily. Taggart fought to maintain it, but it had been a long day, and she'd done too much already. The light from the wall torches started to fade. Taggart caught glimpses of eyes coming from the shadows. She still had her sword and shield, but for the first time, she began to wonder if they were going to be enough.
What's wrong?
We're close. There's something else up ahead.
Cord, you keep him back.
I'm in position.
Sweat ran down Donna's straining face as creatures who could not have existed in the real world pressed close about her and the steward. She'd gone as far as she could, as far as her power and her courage could take her, and it hadn't been far enough. The first faint stirrings of panic tugged at her calm, and she wondered suddenly if this was what Grey Davy had felt before the unreal took him. Taggart swung her sword with desperate strength. The sanctuary stood motionless at her side, her eyes clenched shut, despair written openly on her face. Taggart looked back for Cord, but he had disappeared beneath a horde of swarming creatures back down the corridor. The steward fought on, her arms and back, screaming for rest, but the creatures before her wouldn't stay dead. They were unreal, and they were strong in their own world. Taggart wondered what it would be like to die in the unreal world, and if she would stay dead, or if something with her face would return to wage war against Castle Midnight in the cause of unreality. Sir Gawain Hellstrom, once of Tower Rouge, lay stiffly in his bed, staring up at the ceiling, unable to sleep. He'd blown out his nightlight a good hour ago, but despite heavy eyelids and the weary ache in his bones, sleep still eluded him. Hazy shifts of light spilled into the darkened room from the corridor outside, and his night vision showed him the familiar shapes and shadows of his bedroom. Emma had insisted their furniture be transported from Cahalimar to the castle. Gawain didn't care. Victor was the one who'd end up footing the bill. It wasn't as if he'd chosen any of it himself. He'd never had the time or the inclination to develop domestic instincts. He'd spent most of his life as a soldier, and most of that on the move. His time at Cahalimar had been the longest he'd ever spent in one place. 4 interminable years. He'd waited so long for them to be over, only to discover that what came next was worse. He shifted himself into yet another position, trying to get comfortable. Emma stirred at his side, and he lay still, not wanting to wake her. The years in exile had been hard on Emma. She lived for the gossip, friendships, and factions of high society, and there was little of that in Redheart outside Castle Midnight. She'd been just the same at the Forest Castle. Gawain frowned at the darkness, and for a moment an old bitterness threatened to surface, but he pushed it back. He was Sir Gawain of Redheart now, for better or worse, and the past should stay in the past. Gawain lay very still beside his wife, not touching her at all, for no matter where they were, there was always something between them.
What's the matter, Gawain?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to wake you.
You didn't. You're not the only one who's had trouble sleeping lately.
According to you, you never sleep.
Well, I don't. I never have. Any night I get more than a few hours' sleep is a good night for me. But I'm used to that. You're not. What's the matter?
Nothing in particular, just things. Go to sleep, my love. Busy day tomorrow.
Gawain smiled and relaxed slightly. There was something very comforting, even cozy, about lying in a warm, soft bed and listening to the sound of marching men, whose job it was to see you slept safe and undisturbed. Gawain in particular appreciated it. He'd done his fair share of marching back and forth in the cold on watch duty in his time.
Remember the bed we had back at Forest Castle? I used to love that bed.
Damned ugly monstrosity. Far too big, and it creaked every time we moved.
But it was comfortable. You could just sink into that mattress. And the furniture we had then. This stuff is all very well, but it's not a patch on what we used to have. But then that's true of everything here.
Well, you'll just have to make the most of it. We won't ever be going back to the forest.
We might. Someday.
No, we won't. We can't go back.
Gawain started to sit up in bed, and then made himself lie down again. They'd had this argument before, and shouting only made things worse.
Emma, after what happened, we can never return to Forest Castle. They'd hang both of us.
I only wanted to help. It just got out of hand.
All the long years of bottled-up anger suddenly came together in Gawain, and he finally asked the question he'd promised himself he'd never ask again.
Why did you kill him, Emma? Why did you have to kill him?
He was your rival, Gawain. He stood in your way. If you were ever to get on at court, he had to die.
But suspicion was bound to fall on us, and I never gave a damn for his position or getting on. I was happy as I was.
You never were ambitious enough, Gawain. So I had to be ambitious enough for both of us. Looking back, yes, it was a mistake to kill him, but it was such a clever plan, and it would have worked if we hadn't been betrayed.
Her hand drifted across under the bedclothes and fastened onto his, their fingers intertwined.
And you took the blame for me, Gawain. I've never forgotten that. You gave up your position and your honor to save me. What other woman was ever loved more than I?
What else could I do?
Gawain gave her hand a comforting squeeze.
Now go to sleep, love.
She snuggled up against him, her hand resting on his shoulder. Gawain lay still, staring into the darkness. King John had trusted him, knighted him, loved him as a son. He had been honored and content as a knight of the Forest Kingdom. And then everything had gone wrong, and in the space of a few months, he'd had to give up everything he'd ever cared for to save his wife. Perhaps the saddest truth of all was that deep down where it mattered, he was no longer sure he loved his wife. He kept it from her as best he could, if only because he felt guilty for not loving her as much as she loved him.